Editor's note: the introductory part of this interview begins at about 17 minutes and 40 seconds into the interview.
Jones County was the Klan headquarters for this part of the state. Byron Little Beckwith, the nine jail, is the one that shot up that building next door and had the boldness to come the next day and try to get the pastor's wife to talk to him. She was sweeping up the glass from all the windows they had shot out.
To establish an alibi or just to be bold, like you said?
Just to be bold. And she knew who he was, and she did not come out, come down off out of the house to see him. So we have that, you know, just there. And she said he just stood there and act like ain't nothing went on the night before, you know. But we are, St. Paul United Methodist Church is 104 years old. It is in what used to be at some point in our history, the Back Historical District, where 59 is. We had our first mortuary, funeral home. Brother Christian, who's a member here, or was, his wife is still one of my historians of the church. She keeps me posted on the history. She's the one that helped us get the plaque put out front. She taught history and was a big part of that movement. She talked about how well-guarded King was the day he came, and how the corner was blocked off. They were watching who came in and who went out. But St. Paul is a church where we're trying to live the history, also tell it, so that the next generation will know the things that have come down. Very few of our young people are aware that the church and the Parsons was shot up in 67, bombed in 68. Of course, most people know that this is the home church of Leontine Price, the opera singer. Her family home is the Green House across the street. She still, when she has an opportunity to come home, she comes and she worships here. She hasn't forgotten her home. And this is probably about a meeting, but I'll talk to y'all later. A young lady just did an opera, a doctoral presentation on Leontine and Marian Anderson. Just a few weeks ago, right in November. She came and sung here and talked to some of the members that remember Leontine as a little girl, and then went and took pictures of the house across the street. And the church hasn't changed much from the original building. We still got them lofty roofs in the sanctuary. Very acoustics for not having a piano. But we are a historical church for those reasons. We are church involved in the education of our children. It seems that our education system seems to be going backwards instead of forward. We are graduating less children than we did 15, 20 years ago. We seem to not have the drive to tell kids to go to school. They spend more time at home doing nothing or cutting class. And it is my desire, if I stay here as pastor, that we initiate it's back to the basics again. It's time for us to go back and teach our children, not just education for man, but also what God requires. But it is going to be a journey because we are in a generation of unchurched people. We're almost in our second generation of unchurched individuals. It's amazing to find a number of people that's in their 20s that don't know the Lord's Prayer or the 23rd Psalm because nobody ever took them to church or introduced them to God. So it's a different generation. But what hurts me more than anything is our young people don't know our history. They don't know the number of black men and women that own businesses in this area. 2 miles down the street was the only black hospital. My member, grandfather owned that land and helped with that hospital.
What was the name of the hospital?
It was Brown Memorial. It was a training hospital and the only black hospital in Laurel for blacks. It's right down the street. I would love to see it become a training site again for our future nurses and future doctors. So it's something that I see us trying to do again, because we're not graduating enough of us in general practice that's going to deal with us and people with low income. Oak Park Elementary or Oak Park High School was the only high school that most of the blacks in this community went to. It's within 2 miles of this building as well. I said everything was in this community, and we took care of each other, but we have let that go, and we're letting government and other people take care of our community instead of us. So,
do you think that there has been a shift from, in the past, more of an obligation of black communities to uplift and serve and educate, to just kind of people standing on their own more?
Yeah, it's that. They want to stand on their own. They didn't. We actually stand on the success of the people that were behind us. And we failed to lead. We failed to recognize that. We've got too many young people that say, I did it on my own. And if it wasn't people like Dr. Charles Drew and my Minister of Music, Dr. Eugene Owens, who was the first superintendent of lower schools, black superintendent of lower schools, if we didn't have people like him and Mr. Christian, who owned the first funeral home in town, Miss Williams, I think her last name is Williams. I just recently learned that one of my members owned the only black hotel in town. So I'm going, how come nobody has written this down? Mm-hmm. Well, Pat, no, I'm not from Laurel or Jones County. I wouldn't know that if you don't say something about it. At one point, Laurel was larger than Hattiesburg. It had a transit system that ran from Laurel to Ellisville. But when the Civil Rights Bill passed and they had to integrate the businesses and stores, Laurel almost folded completely, because that mindset, they couldn't bend from it. And a lot of businesses actually left. So we're trying to reestablish the history and let people know. A lot of parts in Mississippi have those histories that we don't want to talk about. But that's in everybody's life. And in every state, there are areas that had that. The Klan did have a stronghold in South Mississippi. I used to work for T. Tougaloo College, acquired Mary Everson's home for the historical reasons, so we can continue to tell the story. And a lot of people that were part of that, they get upset when our kids don't go to school and don't want to learn. But part of our education system fold is we took out the hand-on skills. We took out shop. We took out home ed. We took out auto mechanics. And a lot of our kids, even in my generation, were not college-bound because they didn't have the academic strength to go there. But we took their opportunities to become something. A lot of blacks have always been entrepreneurs. We've always started our own business and used our own skills to make a living. And it had become lost art. Now we're trying to bring it back. But we let it die, trying to push everybody into college or military, and everybody's not that. I know a young man that can take an old Chevy and rebuild it. All he got to do is read the book on what model he has in front of him, buying the parts, and he'll sit there and put the whole thing together. Where it actually passes inspection and the whole 9 yards, you wouldn't think it was a junk car. And I'm going, he is mechanical. He has to have it in his hand. He's not analytical where he can do it on paper. And we've got to go back and teach teachers to recognize kids' skills. And we have an intelligence system. We have 7 different intelligences. They don't always work at the same time. But we have teachers now that I think in education, because it's the only job in America that you work strictly days. Unless you're a coach, then you got the afternoon and weekends. But it's the only profession where you don't have to work in at night. our public education system. And I think we need to look at, we need to revamp that. We need to be in education to teach our children. It's not about, I don't have to work at night, but how well are our kids going to be able to stand and think on their own? I challenged one of my mentors to ask his mentee, tell me how you would tell a five-year-old how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I asked the 10th grader that the other day, and he said, I tell him to get two pieces of bread, a jar of peanut butter, and jelly. I said, but you still ain't told them how to make a sandwich. You told them the ingredients to the sandwich. You still have not told them how to make a sandwich. And his pastor looked at me and said, you're right. We were taught to think when somebody asked a question. We were able to speak clearly and in a few minutes articulate an answer. And that's all he could answer. He couldn't. I said, think about it. Well, how would you tell a five-year-old? So we've got a lot of history, but we've got a lot of growing to do. And we've got to reach for the sky and stop letting that do. I get very upset when people do that'll do. That's just enough to get by. So here I'm pushing that our kids make honor roll. We will reward our kids who make honor roll. I don't like C's. I didn't like it with my four young adults. I don't like them now. Those standards have not changed. So we've got a lot to do and a lot of growing to do. But part of our growth is go back and learn what was in our history that's not in books. And you know yourself as a doctoral student, they just start putting our history in books. I just talked to a retired teacher, said the only text, she said, up until, what did she tell me? She said, I was in my 15th year in teaching before I saw a brand new teacher's edition of a textbook. And I'm looking at her going, she said, I never had a teacher's edition. We took a student edition and we made a teacher's edition from it. It was only when we integrated that I actually got to see a teacher's edition of a textbook. And I'm looking at this lady and going, our teachers were smart enough to able to do that. Our teachers now couldn't do that. Because that means they got to work.
Or if they had to do it, it's not in the curriculum. Why are you teaching outside the curriculum? There's so many boxes.
Right, right.
I mean, you could get in trouble for teaching something to make somebody know how to think better, but it's not, you know, with these tests, they teach
these
to the test
marks,
now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you don't meet that, you're not supposedly a good teacher.
Well, see, the thing is, that's not teaching. Teaching means stepping outside the box, these tiles, and reaching a kid that you would normally not reach.
I'm going to run back and get my
camera. I'm a tutor, so I used to teach algebra and history. But now when I tutor people, especially adults going back to school in college algebra, I always relate it to something that they know. I had a young man at my home church that failed trig. And he said, I said, how you fail trig and you play pool every Friday? He said, what does trig and pool got to do with it? I said, meet me at the pool hall and I'll show you. And on second thought, give me a piece of paper. I drew a pool table. I said, trig is about line, size, and angles. When you play pool, you're taking that cue ball, knocking it off a solid or a stripe, and banking it. It always forms a triangle. I don't care how you put it. A straight line is a 180-degree triangle. And he looked at me. And after I drew it, he said, she right. It is a triangle. I said, you apply trig every time you play pool on Friday. So why are you flunking the class? He said, it ain't that easy. I said, it is that easy. Turn around and he had to retake the class, but he passed. Because he remembered what I said. And all of his papers, he had a pool table drawn on the side of it. But that's the journey. You've got to step outside the benchmark and say, what do I need to do to reach this kid? Mm-hmm. The other thing we have to do in education is we've got to set some standards. Not the schools, not the district standard, not the state, but your standards for your classroom. Because I have taught kids who they thought wasn't going to make it through second grade, seventh grade, because they thought their skills were down here, but they never looked beyond. that's why I appreciate the movie Freedom Riders, because she never accepted what folks said about her students. She always challenged them to come up. And that's what our teachers need to do. Yes, we got the benchmarks, but challenge. A lot of our kids have not been challenged to think outside of their community, think outside of what they see. In a staff meeting a few years ago, they said, look at the education areas at your table, and one of you will relate all of those subject areas to the real world. At my table was a biology teacher, a chemistry teacher, a business education teacher, an algebra teacher, and English. And being that I'm one with a strong voice, they said, okay, you relate this to the real world. I said, well, if we're going to relate this to the real world, I'm going to relate to what my kids know about, and those are dealers on corners. What you see on the corner are the hired employees of the manager or the store owner. Now, the store owner has to have some chemistry background because he knows what his product looks like. He knows what it tastes like. He knows when you didn't broke it down too far. So he has to have a background in chemistry, and he has to have some mathematical skills. But above all, he has to have some personal skills, so he needs to be able to talk, convince people to come and join him. And the principal said, okay, that's enough. You said the real world. Okay, I know who I work with. I know what my kids talk about in class every day. Yeah. And she said, you didn't have to go there. I said, well, I listen to what my children say in class. And I challenge them all the time to go beyond what they say. I tell my athletes, get an academic scholarship as well as a academic scholarship. Why, Miss Evan? Because if you get injured, your academic scholarship still covers you while you work on your degree. Because if you get redshirted, you can't play. And now the NCAA requiring that they take these academic tests to make sure they're able to read, write, and understand. We got kids going into college, can't pass their tests. But they were star athletes because somebody kept passing them along. I thought that behavior had stopped, but it's still here. And that's the reason why our system is falling apart. We have been passing people. Teachers have lost their ethics about teaching. If you don't know the basics, you're not passing my class.
May I ask you some biographical information? Because mm-hmm. We kind of bypassed that. Would you please state your full name?
Reverend Tanya Edwards Evans.
Okay, and when and where were you born?
Born and raised in Jackson, Mississippi. Graduate of Callaway High School, graduate of University of Southern Mississippi, and a graduate of Memphis Theological Seminary.
Okay.
And the mother of two males and two females. My two men are Marines. My oldest child is working on a degree in mortuary science. My younger child is working on a double major in accounting and business and hotel management.
Who are your parents?
My parents are Doris and Sherman Edwards.
Okay, and where are they from?
My father is from Greenwood area, Greenwood, Mississippi, where he was raised by his aunts. My mother is from Charleston, South Carolina.
And your dad, who are his parents?
Hattie and Charles McGee.
And where are they from?
Tylertown area.
I'm sorry, you would have to be...
Tylertown, Mississippi. That is Wathaw County. Okay.
And your mother's mother and father?
My mother's father is Janine and Thomas Robinson from Charleston, South Carolina.
Okay, and how about their parents? Do you have knowledge of your mother's side, your father's mother and father?
No, I do not of their names.
Okay, and how about on your great grandparents? Do you have any knowledge of any of them on either side?
I do know that my great grandfather was a French, on my mother's side, was a French officer. My great-great-grandmother was a Carolina Indian. She was from the tribe there. She had 15 children. My great-grandmother on my mother's side was the only woman that we knew that was 6 feet tall. She bore 6 boys. All of them were either in musician or in education.
Okay. Now you're saying that was your
mother's side.
Oh, your mother's side. Okay.
Mm-hmm. My father's grandparents, I am not sure.
Okay.
Because he didn't talk much about his, I think they were already gone. So.
Okay, and you mentioned your four children. What are their names?
Timothy Evans, Cynthia Evans, James Evans, and Doris Evans.
What is your earliest memory of your personal education?
Personal education, Mary C. Jones Elementary on Martin, what used to be Whitfield Mills Road in Jackson, Mississippi, which is now Martin Luther King Boulevard mm-hmm. in Jackson, Mississippi.
Did you have a favorite teacher or favorite subject there?
My favorite subject was, it's always been math. When I got to high school, it became history. There's one teacher that I always admired, but I didn't like her at the same time. And she was my biology teacher in high school. She was able to quote that biology book and never look down at the page. And I said, Lord, if I ever teach, let me be like her. Mm-hmm. But she was stern. She expected the best out of us. Mm-hmm. And Miss Affinette Cotton was the same way. She taught English.
She didn't what was the name of the biology teacher? I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Miss Young.
Okay.
And Miss Dorothy Young.
Okay. Now, Miss Affinette Cotton.
She's English. 12th grade English. Mm-hmm. And she demanded a lot from us. I enjoyed her because I had the opportunity at my high school, Callaway, the year that I became a senior, we were able to do a college step. We got a chance to pick our instructors for what course. And I chose her for black literature and black and literary writing. And I was introduced to black writers. And it was an interesting thing to see that we actually had more than Richard Wright and Nikki Giovanni and all of these people and Langston Hughes, but there were other writers. And now my daughter, my oldest child, is collecting different writers. I have a library at home with Jerome Dickey and Elaine Harris and Kimberly Lawson Roby. And now my grandbaby loves books, and she fussed at me, Grandma, when you coming back to take me to the library? Mm-hmm. She wants to go to the library, not the park, the library. So mm-hmm. We encourage reading, and because that's how you learn the language. Mm-hmm. And I'm one of 10. I have living in four brothers living and two sisters.
What are the names of your brothers and sisters?
Beverly, Thomas, Jerome, Kelvin, Izetta, and Douglas. My deceased brother, one that we do know the name of, is Alonzo, Vietnam vet, and my twin sister, Tanya, and then one unknown.
Outside of religiously inspired literature, because I'm sure if I ask you what your favorite book would be, you'd tell me the Bible. But in terms of otherwise than that, and maybe I'm just guessing, what would be who are your favorite authors or your favorite books?
My favorite author would be Kimberly Lawson Roby, who writes in Christian fiction. She talks about the drama that occurs around churches. Mm-hmm. My other favorite writer would more than likely be Jerome Dickey. But again, I like reading magazines, books. Since I spend a lot of time, as they say, by myself, I do a lot of reading. Mm-hmm. But I spend a lot of time learning stuff in education. So as I work with adults going back to school, or children struggling, I know what's coming, what's current. But technology has made us lazy in learning. We can go online and kick out anything.
Actually, that's how I found this location, Sanctuary. I just typed in Civil Rights, Laurel, and Mississippi, and it mm-hmm. came up with this address.
Yes.
So I guess sometimes it can be helpful, but you're right, it does make us a little lazy.
Well, and the reason why, what I mean by lazy in technology is kids will go to the library and kick out a report about somebody, and then they'll turn it in as their work.
Cut and paste.
That's plagiarism. And I happened to tell one of my former students that, don't go home and turn this in as yours. Go home and write it like a seventh grader would write it. And I told her mom, don't let her cut and paste and turn this in. That's plagiarism. That's an automatic F. She said, nobody's ever told us that. I said, you know me. I'm going to be straight with you. Mm-hmm. She needs to stop that habit now. Mm-hmm. Because we have a program, and technology has its benefit. We have programs now that can tell a teacher if you have plagiarized. That's why some people have lost their degrees because of that program. So, but I want us to, if we don't do anything in the next 10 years, let's go back and teach the skill so our people can survive.
Excuse me.
Not teach to a test, but teach the skill. Teach them how to think. And where they can answer on the top of their head, as we used to do in extemporaneous speech class, you had to go.
Were you in forensics in high school? You did speech and debate. You mentioned extemporaneous speaking.
Yeah, I was officer of Future Farmer of America, and it was one of their requirements that presidents always had to be in that speech competition. Mm-hmm. I've always had the ability to get elected into a position without a lot of effort. Used to aggravate my little sister because she be trying and I don't be trying. Mm-hmm. And I get elected and she doesn't. So and we always had classes together because we are a year apart. Mm-hmm. And we had chemistry together in high school. We had biology together in high school. And it was a competition. She had studied. I wouldn't. I have an A. She have a B. And it was a fight.
How did you get involved in FFA, and how is that expanded your leadership?
I got involved in FFA when I became part of a horticulture class at the Career Development Center in Jackson. And because my fascination of plants and animals, and then there's structure about parliamentary rules and all of this. So, and I was always interested in law and structure, so it became second nature to me in doing parliamentary procedure and rules. And because I was also most of the time scared of speaking in front of folk, I would do a speech if I knew what I had to talk about because I had time to put it on paper. But I got challenged by Mr. Obie to do one where you don't know what's going to come. And I served as the president of that chapter my junior and senior year. So it's been a journey, but getting in school organizations give you an outlet to introduce to different things. The extracurricular of the schools has its benefit because it introduced even the quietest kid to something new, mm-hmm. or opened the door to different skills they didn't know they had. FBLA, all of these things that we have in the high schools. We have the Girls Academy here, sponsored by the Deltas, where they bring teenage girls, and then we house them here and teach them etiquette and proper dress. And
Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, mm-hmm. Incorporated.
Mm-hmm. And we work with them on etiquette and behavior and how you should be at, you know, presenting yourself and how important it is to stay on top of your grades. And so groups like that and have helped some of our young ladies see a focus that's not less than becoming a baby-making machine, as society has pretty much put out that that's all teenage women do, and it's not. We have a large number of them finishing school. Some of them, even with children, have finished and went on to do better, bigger and better things. So, but that's our journey.
Are you in a sorority?
No, I'm not.
Okay. And I just want to back up for a second. You mentioned Mr. Overby. Who is Mr. Overby?
He was the horticulture instructor that always challenged me to go outside my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. Especially when we had to have competitions. I would always assign somebody else. Being president, I get to tell somebody else they're doing it. He said, oh, no, you can't do that. You got to lead by example. You need to show them that you can do it as well. And so that's where the journey started.
How did you end up being the minister here as opposed to working in horticultural and agricultural science?
That is pretty much what we call the call story. I have been active in the church since I was about 9 or 10 years old. It is something I've always been able to do. According to my big sister, I can take any text and explain it to a young person and an old person and never lose either one of them in the conversation. My first profession, actually I wanted to be, was a lawyer. I even went to school for it. Paralegal studies, and was getting ready to go to Howard University. Got married, and God turned me toward education at the request of a retired teacher.
What was that teacher's name?
Miss Emma Moore. She said, I need you to go take the NTE. We need some more black instructors, teachers in classrooms who really care about kids. I said, okay, Miss Moore, I'll take this test. I ain't guarantee I'm going to pass it. And that's when the state of Mississippi had the NTE. And I took it and passed it on the first shot. And amazed a lot of folk in education. How did you do that? And you were an education major. I said, because my teachers taught me how to think. Not just memorize facts or tests, but they taught me how to think. And so I went into teaching that, and I've done that with Jacksonville School for 17 years. I was also a GED instructor for Hines Community College. And I enjoy doing that for the simple reason we need to get our attitudes off the bottom and bring them closer to the sky. But the ministry came in the midst of the illness of my husband and everything I had to do juggling the whole family. I decided to take my calling, accept my calling into the ministry. And everybody in my family said, well, it was about time. You've been doing this already. You just wasn't getting paid for it. Because I had been doing trainings, teaching the Methodist structure all over the state of Mississippi, all the way through high school and college. So I had already been doing it as a layperson. And so I accepted it. My children didn't have a problem with it, except when I've got to go someplace by myself, then my sons get a little concerned. With today's society. Mom, you sure you're going to be all right? Mama's going to be fine. So my journey is not over. We still have a lot of people that don't know who he is. And I tell my churches, the reason that we are not growing is we shut people out once they enter the door. I mean, look at me. We have open door for them to come in, but we shut them out once they get in. We don't allow them to grow and stretch their imagination and their skills that they can be used by God. And then they walk right back out those doors and you don't see them anymore. So hopefully my job and responsibility is to help people see where they are in God. Not where people want you to be, but where God wants you to be. And God can take the simplest creature and make them important. He says, food, watch an ant, you might learn something. And that's in Proverbs. And an ant is one of the smallest, outside of a gnat, is the smallest insect that God created. But he teaches you that you work. You should have a work ethic on anything that you do. And rest when the season says that you can't work. And so that's what I'm working on, is hoping to educate our folk so when the time comes, they'll be able to use it. And lean on and trust God, not just let it be a phrase on a dollar bill or a coin, but truly trust Him, especially with the layoffs at Masonite and Sanderson Farm, the major employers here in Laurel, in the hospital. So I think I talked too much.
No, you've done a great job. I appreciate it. I just have a couple of final questions. Could you tell me a little bit about the history of the marker outside?
We have a mark outside recognizing the date that Martin Luther King spoke here at St. Paul.
I believe it's March 19th, 1968.
March 19th. It was that marker came up about 5 years ago through the history department at JCJC. and my
Jones
Junior College.
Okay.
Jones County Junior College.
Okay.
It came up with our church historian realizing that we had not recognized that day. And she got with the State of Mississippi Historical Society, and they got all the information and articles from the newspaper that day and the days after. And we put the marker down, I think it was 2 years ago.
And what is the historian's name?
Estelle Christian. She was serving as the church historian then. She presently still lives here. She's 84 years old.
She'd be a wonderful person to talk with.
I believe she's at home. I'll have to show you where she lives. She can give you all kinds of historical stuff on the city of Laurel.
Okay.
And the black community businessman, because she was part of all of that.
Okay, I wish I had time to spend all day, but perhaps one more person, she'd be an appropriate person to speak with.
Next time you come through Laurel, we'll work on doing that.
Well, I hope that we are able to establish, you know, a more longer lasting relationship. The Sam Proctor Oral History Program, we're looking for partners to continue to work with.
Oh, okay.
We work with the Sunflower County Freedom Project up in the Delta in Indianola. That's part of the reason we continue to come, and we come back to Mississippi every year. We'll be back in September.
Okay.
Up in the Delta, but perhaps this is an opportunity to establish this relationship.
And we have, and being that I'm a Methodist preacher, I meet a lot of retired teachers and people in history. There is a female by the name of Miss Lois Flagg, retired educator of 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to know anything about the history of Hinds County, she knows it.
Mm-hmm.
She can even tell you family lineages and who married who. And I'm going, Miss Flagg, you 80 years old, how you remember all of it?
Mm-hmm.
She said, because I love history, and she's sister and goes through. They just recently took down the only wood bridge in Edwards to put a concrete bridge over the train track, and she had to go take pictures of them taking that bridge down, because that's the only thing she's remembered in 80 years was that wood bridge going across the railroad track. So there's a lot of history, and a lot of our people are still here. You can call St. Paul at any point, or call me.
Well, I appreciate
that.
And
I can let Mrs. Steele know that you're going to call her one day.
Definitely, because
I think she would love it. Along with, I got a couple other people who have born and raised here, so they know all the changes that have come through here in Laurel.
Well, in closing the interview, I want to thank you for allowing me to take this time to speak with you and give you the opportunity to make any comments you would like to make. And at the conclusion of those comments, that'll conclude the interview.
Enjoyed it. Again, I'm pastor of St. Paul United Methodist Church, the historical church of Miss Leontine Price. Her home family house is right across the street. We are a church that is trying to reestablish our connection of our past to our future, that we may be better equipped to serve God's world in Laurel, Mississippi.